Good morning. Thank you so much for the wonderful Jonah story. That's great. I really appreciate that. So you've been doing a series on communication with God, and I loved how you ended the story. You know, it's really important for us to listen to God. But how do we hear God? That is such a long, important question that Christians have wrestled with, and the Jewish people before us. How do we hear God's voice? Today, I'm not so much giving a typical sermon as I'm sharing about my own life and how I've heard the voice of God in the last little while. And I'm going to tell you some fish stories. You probably saw that from the title of my sermon. One is from the Bible, the Jonah story, and a couple of them happened to me. And I'm asking, where is God in the midst of these stories? I've lived most of my life on the shores of Lake Ontario. Every summer through my whole childhood, every weekend, we would go to the beach and I would swim in the water of the lake. As an adult now, I still love going to the beach. I don't swim in the water anymore, but I walk along it all the time. It's my favorite walk. So I love what's on the altar table today because that looks like every windowsill in my house because I love picking up things from nature and bringing them into my house. Last summer, when I was walking on the beach, I came across an enormous fish, a really big fish, the biggest fish I'd ever seen washed up on the beach in my life. It was around 4 feet long. It had the strangest face and these really weird bumps along its back. It almost looked prehistoric, like a dinosaur. And it looked so strange, I took pictures of it. And I went home and I looked up, what kind of fish could this possibly be, unlike anything I'd seen in my life? It turns out it was a lake sturgeon. A lake sturgeon is an endangered species on the Great Lakes. I found out it used to be one of the most plentiful fish in the Great Lakes. Lake sturgeon can live to be up to 150 years old. They can grow up to 15 feet long. And they only spawn once every 7 to 15 years, because they're so long-lived. But every year in the early 1900s, 5 million pounds of sturgeon were caught on Lake Erie alone. And that happened in all of the Great Lakes, and it was overfished. That, combined with habitat destruction of pollution and agricultural runoff and all of the dams that we've put on a lot of streams, has led to their great decline. After figuring out it was a lake sturgeon, I sent my pictures to the Ministry of the Environment because if you see an endangered species, they want to know where it was and how big it was, and they keep track of things like that. This experience of finding this strange fish is not something I could shake. I kept thinking about it, and it got me thinking about other fish I'd seen along the shores of Lake Ontario. When I was a kid in the 1960s, when we went swimming, I had to walk over giant piles of dead fish. And I thought that was normal, that every lake has piles of dead fish on the shore and you have to step over them to go swimming. Of course, now as an adult, I realize that that is not normal for a lake to have piles of dead fish. It was pollution. In the 1960s, Lake Ontario was nearing a crisis point, and there was a lot of environmental activism by people to try to clean up the Great Lakes, if some of you who are old enough will remember that. And at that time, the Love Canal was in Niagara Falls, and it was spewing so many chemicals through the Niagara River down into Lake Ontario. And that was cleaned up gradually. And so now when I go walking, I occasionally see a dead fish, but not piles of dead fish everywhere. I remembered, too, that when I was a kid swimming in Lake Ontario once, I was swimming underwater and I opened my eyes and I came nose to nose with a giant fish. And it just shocked me to pieces because it seemed to be about as big as me. And I was almost jumped right out of the water, like without even touching the bottom, because I had never really thought that I would be sharing my swimming place with creatures. And it was a very shocking thing to see. And I wonder, it could have been that very lake sturgeon that I met all that time ago, because lake sturgeon can live as long as I do. The same fall that I saw the lake sturgeon on Lake Ontario washed up on the beach, we had a speaker come to Conrad Grable College. And she was telling us about the water walkers, the water walker movement. They told us about the story of Josephine Mandeman and an Anishinaabe woman who had a great spiritual heart for the water of Lake Ontario and the Great Lakes. And she was worried that we weren't taking care of it. And so she started walking around the perimeter of each of the Great Lakes to pray for the water and to draw attention to the abuses of people of this great water system. And this has her walking around the Great Lakes on this spiritual quest led to other First Nations and other environmental people walking with First Nations people around the waters of the Great Lakes to remind people about what a gift they are and how we need to take care of them, praying to the Creator for the health of the water. Hearing Josephine's story really touched my heart. I realized that I am a water walker in a way because I walk along the water so often. That's where I always walk. But not once in my whole life had I ever prayed for the water. It had never occurred to me. Why should I pray for the water? It just was not a category I had. I pray for people. I don't pray for water. But hearing Josephine's story made me think, why don't I pray for the water? And I thought, what about that lake sturgeon? What if that lake sturgeon was sent to me as a message that I should be praying for the water? How does God speak to us? Could God speak to us through a big fish? Got me thinking about Jonah and his big fish story. The scripture passage that we read today from Jonah is a prayer that Jonah says when he's in the depth of the ocean in the belly of the whale. Jonah was initially not a person who prayed. This is the first prayer we see in the book of Jonah. And it's kind of surprising because Jonah didn't pray when God first talked to him, telling him to go to Nineveh. God gave him that message, and Jonah didn't pray to him and say anything back. Jonah didn't pray when he rejected the call. He didn't pray when he went down to Joppa. He didn't pray when he got on the ship to Tarshish. He didn't pray during the storm. He didn't pray when the sailor said, "What should we do?" And he didn't pray when the captain said, "Please pray." He didn't pray. He didn't pray when the sailors throw him overboard. He prays later. He prays when he is at his lowest point. And it's interesting, if you read through the book of Jonah, the word down is featured like 25 times. Jonah goes down to Joppa, he goes down to the port, he goes below the deck of the ship, he falls into a deep sleep, he's thrown into the deep. And it talks about Sheol, the underworld, where he is, and it's at the lowest place where he finally finds some words to pray. And that's what we read today, is his first prayer. It's a prayer of someone who has gone down under, someone who is sinking, who's had the ultimate sinking feeling, a prayer from the pits. So we read the prayer. He calls out to God. He describes his situation. He talks a lot about the sea and the flood and the billows and the waters, even the weeds surrounding his head, life ebbing away. He describes his thoughts. He remembers God. He thinks about how he used to be in the temple, and he prays. And he realizes, God has spared me. God has saved my life here. As we read this prayer, there is something that is not there. First of all, let's look at what he does say. He does say, those who worship vain idols forsake their true loyalty, but I, with a voice of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you. There's something weird going on in this prayer. It's very easy to miss it because it sounds like a psalm, and sometimes we let the psalms wash over us. We just think, oh, isn't that nice? Beautiful words, very nice. But what is he actually saying? Because here's Jonah, who's been disobedient to God, who's run away, who has refused to be a prophet. He's miraculously spared, and in the belly of the whale, he doesn't talk about his own sin. He maybe thought it. We don't know if he thought it, but in his prayer, it doesn't get in. He doesn't say, I did the wrong thing. I'm sorry. I am a sinner. He does not say that. He says, those idolaters over there, boy, are they sinners, but me, I'm praising God. That's his confession, is I'm the one who's doing the right thing. It's almost as if he thinks he deserved to be saved because he's not like those idolaters over there. And I think he was talking about the people who were on the boat because they were talking about all the different gods. But when he told them about the one true God, they immediately started praying to the one true God, and they did not want to throw him overboard. They wanted to save his life. And yet, here he is in his prayer saying, those bad people, I'm not like them. I'm the one who's going to call on God. Jonah is painting himself as the righteous one. Jonah's prayer is not a perfect prayer. It's a prayer in a tight spot. It's a prayer that is not particularly gracious to the people around him. It's not filled with a lot of insight into his own life, and yet God accepts the prayer. God doesn't say, okay, now you're going deeper into the ocean because that's a horrible prayer. No. God says, that's okay. You're doing your best, and God saves him and puts him up on land again. Well, God says that the fish vomited him up onto the land. Very vivid. God doesn't wait for perfect repentance. God can take you from where you are right there and do some work with you, even though he hadn't reached a really good place where he was praying in a proper way. So how does this big fish story help me think about my fish story? I spend time now walking along the shores of Lake Ontario, and I pray for the lake. I pray for the purity of the water. I pray for the creatures that are in the water, that they would be safe. I pray for all who have control over what goes into the lake. I think about all the factories that are all around the Great Lakes. I pray that the people in charge of pushing buttons and letting bad stuff go into the lake, that they wouldn't do that. But I realize, like Jonah, that I don't think about my own sin very much. What do I put down the drain? How are my prayers falling short? How are my actions falling short? What do I need to learn? What is God trying to teach me? A few years ago, I was in Mexico, and I was there visiting my sister and her friend, and he has a boat down there, and so he took us out fishing on his sailboat. We were around three. It was on the Huatulco, which is like on the Pacific side of Mexico, right by Guatemala, so very south on the shore of the Pacific Ocean. So we were around 3 miles off the coast. It was absolutely a glorious day, blue ocean. And we had five lines in the water, and one of them starts pulling, right? So our friend gives the line, the fishing rod, to my husband. He says, we'll try and bring that fish in. Well, it was not an easy fish to bring in. It took us like 10 or 15 minutes to do that. And with all your strength to get this fish to come in. And eventually, he was able to bring it in and scooped it up with the big net. It was a huge fish, like a 20-pound yellowfin tuna. It was not wanting to be caught. And even after we had it in the boat, we weren't sure we had it because it was flopping around. It wanted to get free. It was really a beautiful, beautiful fish. It wasn't something we ended up eating because my friends, this friend, he catches fish and sells it to restaurants in the area. And so we didn't eat the tuna after all. But it was a really amazing experience to see this wild fish. So after we caught that fish, we went down to another spot down the ocean to look for more tuna. We had our five lines in. And as we were sailing along the coast, we saw three really, really big ships. And they had cranes on them. And I said, what are those ships? I've never seen a ship look like that. He said, well, those are tuna boats. And I said, they look like ocean liners. Oh, yeah. He says, they catch a lot of fish. And he explained, he showed what was happening. They had helicopters on them. And a helicopter would get up and it would go looking for a school of tuna. And then when it found one, it would hover. And then the ship would come and do a big circle around the tuna. And it had a net 1.5 kilometers long. And it would surround the tuna and then it would close the bottom of it. And it would use the giant crane to lift up everything that was in that 1.5 kilometer circle. And so we watched it. We were there all afternoon fishing. We didn't catch anything else, but we watched them pulling up everything in the deep. Of course, they haul up everything that was there. They haul up the dolphins and the turtles, every other type of fish, but they're only looking for tuna. As I watched these big boats, I got such a sinking feeling. Those tuna didn't stand a chance. There were three big boats. How would they survive? And yet I had been fishing tuna too that very afternoon. After that experience, coming home to Canada and walking through the supermarket, I just didn't have the heart to buy tuna anymore. I kept thinking about those boats and those helicopters. And I haven't bought tuna since then. Even when I buy cat food, I won't buy the type of cat food that has tuna in it. I keep thinking about the big boats. And I wonder, I looked it up on Google last night. There are 100 million pet cats in North America. That's a lot of cats. But why should the oceans be drained of fish to feed our pets? Of course, cats in their natural life would never be able to catch a tuna. And yet we're supporting them with tuna. And of course, that's a crazy way to think about it, because cats can't catch a cow either, and yet we feed them beef. But to me, it seemed a little bit different, because cows we raise for food, whereas tuna are wild animals, and we're fishing them to the point of extinction. Fishing wild tuna is a $42 billion industry, and over half the species of tuna are endangered. Scientists think that the tuna population may be on the verge of collapse, just like the cod. We're on the tuna. So anyway, I haven't gone back to Mexico since then, but even though I haven't been there in my mind's eye, I walk along those beaches, the beautiful Pacific Ocean beaches, and I pray for the water, I pray for the ocean, I pray for the tuna and other species at risk. How does God speak to us? How do we hear God's voice in our life? Do you know, my mother had a vision once. She had a vision where an angel came to her and spoke to her. It changed her life, that experience. I have always wanted an angel to come to me and speak to me, but that has not happened in my life. What if God is speaking to me in a different way, in a more humble way? Maybe God's speaking to me through fish. From the time I was a kid, maybe God was speaking to me through the piles of dead fish I stepped over along the shore of Lake Ontario. Maybe God was speaking to me through the big fish I came face to face with when I was swimming. Maybe God was speaking to me through the beautiful tuna we caught, shining and strong on the boat's floor. Maybe God spoke to me through the lake sturgeon that I found, the only fish I've ever seen that big on Lake Ontario, an endangered species dead before its time. God speaks to me still when I walk in the grocery store and see cans of tuna and cat food made from tuna. I am not a perfect person. And like Jonah, my prayers are very flawed. My actions aren't always good. I could have heard what the fish were saying a long time ago, but I didn't. And I'm much quicker to look at the problems other people have and what they should do to fix this problem than my own actions. But maybe God can work with even my small, imperfect prayers, my small, imperfect actions. I still eat salmon. I'm not a vegetarian. I'm not a crusader. I don't go around. This is the first time I've ever really talked about my experience with the lake sturgeon. But God sent some big fish in my life, and now that's where some of my prayers and actions are centered. Because of these divine visitors with fins, I'm wondering about Jesus. He said he was living water. How is Jesus as living water related to Lake Ontario? How is Jesus related to the Pacific Ocean? Can Jesus be speaking to me through those bodies of water, through the creatures that live there, and through what I see on my grocery shelves? Maybe God speaks to each one of us in different ways. I wonder for you, how might God be speaking to you through the creatures of the earth. We cannot save everything. We can't even think about every endangered species. It's too big. It makes our head explode. But maybe God is bringing one creature into your life to think about. I'm not thinking about animals. I'm not thinking about bears. I'm not thinking about butterflies. I'm not thinking about birds. Like, those aren't what's in my mind. I'm thinking about fish. But not everyone has to think about fish. Who is God bringing to meet you? Is it through a bird or a butterfly? Is it through an animal? How is God touching your heart through the creatures of the earth? I think sometimes we think if we can't save everything, we shouldn't even talk about one thing because it's hypocritical. But maybe, like the Good Samaritan, we're not supposed to save every person robbed by strangers, but we can do the one person that God puts into our path. And so if God is bringing one creature into your life right now, which creature is it? And what is God saying to you? And will we listen?